IW. We're beginning the technical net at this time. As we do most Sunday evenings, this will be technet number 1628 of a series that began in September of 1982, 34 years ago. And the technet is a gathering of people who want to know more about radio and understand their equipment a little bit better and how the 27 or so different kinds of ham radio work. That's the main thing they want to know. And during the first hour, we take check-ins from people who do have a question or a comment. You need not sign in just because you're listening. After 34 years, we believe somebody is listening. Let me drop. So during the first hour, people check in because they do have a question or a comment. After that, it's followed by John, KC2WGB, who gives us some mailbag submittals. People who don't yet have the right license or the right equipment to talk to us directly. They communicate with John by his email website, which you can find at qrz.com. That's KC2WGB. And he chooses two or three or so of those submittals that we then discuss. That's followed by Paul, WS2N, who gives us our space report. Tonight he'll be giving us space report number 228 of the series. NASA is always doing a lot of things, and we get a lot of positive mail from people who really enjoy the space report. Let me drop it. One of the things that's recently come to my attention is that John and I and Paul frequently say that when it comes to questions for the TechNet, there's no such thing as a dumb question. A person who's unfamiliar with the material, so he can't ask the question in sophisticated language. If you think about it, that's the guy who's most deserving of an answer. So we don't tell people, hey, that question doesn't come up to our level. We're not going to handle it. So don't feel bashful, because sometimes we get a little bit deep into the technology. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes the questions are very simple. Just because you've got a simple question, you're not quite sure how to express it, don't let that intimidate you to not sign in and give us your question. So as I said, there's no such thing as a dumb question from our point of view. We try not to be elitist like that. Right, John? Now, let's see. Let me turn it back over to Vito. Vito, is there something that you wanted to tell us? Vito, go right ahead. K2RIW.
Yes, I have an issue I have to ask a question about, if I may. I was I'm in a new installation in my basement, another radio station I built, but I forgot about moving the antenna switch from one antenna to the other, and I'm saying, why isn't anybody hearing me? I'm seeing readings on my equipment, but my signal's not hitting the repeaters. So, anyway, with all that said, that's all nonsense. I have a question, yes.
Okay, so we're going to take check-ins at this time. Vito is our first check-in. To check-in, because you do have a question or a comment, you're going to give us your call letters, your name, and the word yes. Yes, meaning you do have a question or a comment. So give us your call letters and names right now. K2RIW listening.
W2RIY, Joe, yes.
WO2N, Bernie, yes.
H2LYW, Dennis, yes.
Okay, we've picked up Joe, Bernie, and Dennis. Dennis, is your prefix Kilo Delta 2 LYN? Do I have that correctly?
Negative, it's KD2LYW.
LYW. Okay, thank you, Dennis. Okay, anyone else to check in? Because if you have a question or a comment, give me your call letters and name right now. We've got more than enough to get started. So, Vito, you're number one on the runway, the V2 TJF. K2RIW, go right ahead, Vito.
Yes, good evening. I apologize. This is Vito, WA2PJF. I have a question. I have several meaning many, bird watt meters. And recently, with the last week or two, one of them got stupid. And meaning that it was not reading the correct power, very low power. So I took the liberty of swapping, changing elements of the same frequency and power, and it made no difference. Then I took out the element completely. I this little contact in there that touches the element. I checked that. I moved it forward slightly, thinking maybe it wasn't making contact onto the element itself. And, however, that did not solve the problem. So then I went inside. The instrument opened the whole thing up, thinking maybe the connector inside, a little piece of coax had gotten loose, and it did not do that. Anyway, any thoughts anything I can possibly have done with this meter. I even went online, I Googled it, looked up all possibilities. I can't find the problem. For example, if I'm running 100 watts of power, it reads 20 watts, 20, 25 maximum. And no matter what I do, what I check, what I adjust, what I attempt to do, makes no bearing. It still reads the same very low power. And this happened just out of the blue. It was working perfectly a short time before I reconnected to a different transmitter, and now the problem is permanent. So any suggestions? WA2PJF.
E2WGB with a comment.
Okay, I've got lots of comments, but we're going to go to John first. Go ahead, John.
Okay, Dick. Vito, the birds that I've had similar problems with wound up being the meter movement itself. And one way you can check it is put the meter in different attitudes, see if it reads the exact same reading while you're moving the meter, laying it on its side, on its back. It could be the armature inside, which is operating that needle. The bearing points, which are jeweled, sometimes get rough spots. I've had things like that happen to me a few times, and the only thing I could do is and lubricating it didn't work and trying to fix it. I had to replace the meter. And you can also check the meter. I think it's a 30 microampere movement. Generate 30 microamps and see if you get that meter to come up to its full scale. Back to you, Dick.
Good information there, John. Thank you. Vito, you did say you have multiple bird model 43s. If you take the exact same slug you're using in the so-called defective meter, plug it into another bird 43, and you make measurements with it, do you get the right readings? If so, that would be strong confirmation there's nothing funny going on with the slug, that it really is the
E-J.
Okay, Eric recognized that it really is that particular meter movement. And one way of generating the very small amount of current would be to literally measure with your ohm meter across the contacts. You don't have to take it apart. I think you can reach the contacts right where the slug is by putting your ohm meter on one of the high scales, like the times 1,000 scale or the times 10,000 scale. Your ohm meter does generate a small amount of current. And if you compare the meter movement with that ohm meter with a second bird 43 versus the so-called defective one, and that way you'd get another confirmation of something funny going on with the meter movement itself. Let's see what Eric's got to say. When if you've ever had a failure on the bird 43, Eric. KE2EJ, way out there in Hawaii. K2RIW in the TechNet. You got it, Eric.
K2RIW, KE2EJ, portable, King Henry 6. I've had a different problem with the two model 43s of different ages, and what turns out is the actual piece of coax, how they strip it and split it and then solder it, on two of those meters exactly where the split is, it did become slightly shorted. I had one that was open where they crimp it to the terminal pin and they solder it, but it just doesn't make, you know, that solid connection. So after a little corrosion, because it's not a really good solder joint, you get resistance there. I've never seen a meter fail. That I've not experienced. But and also the little RF connector that hooks up to the directional coupler body, that is an old style RF connector. You've got to make sure that's tight. K2RIW, K2J.
I can see how if the braid that represents the coaxial cable that transmits the signal to the meter, if that braid, if one of those whiskers created a short circuit, that could make the meter read very low. My first question, though, Vito, is I think you said you've got multiple bird 43s, and I think that means that at least one other bird 43 with that exact same slug gives reasonable readings, in which case you're doing the right thing to troubleshoot the one that's reading low. KC2, here we go. WA2PJF, K2RIW, go right ahead, Vito.
WA2PJF. Well, okay. I have like 7 or 8, maybe 9 of these meters. They're all working beautifully. And what caused how this silliness started, believe it or not, I have so much radio equipment, it's ridiculous. So on the second floor of my house, I have one room that's filled with equipment. And what happened was I said, let me move some of this equipment down into the basement and build a second radio station so I don't disturb anybody upstairs when they're trying to sleep at night. So I set up another station to alleviate the pressure upstairs. So I moved one of these meters in particular from the second floor to the basement. I put it next to the particular transmitter that I was setting up. I have a Collins S-line set up in the basement down here, and all my two-meter rig, which I'm talking on now. I just had a matter of moving the meter, which was working beautifully 15 minutes before. I brought it down to the basement, connected to the transmitter, this 2-meter one which I'm talking on now, and suddenly I keyed the transmitter and I'm reading very low power. I said, I only walked it down 2 flights of stairs. I didn't touch anything. So, speaking to others and looking on Google, as I had mentioned earlier, they had said the same thing that John said, the meter movement may have become defective. As far as the other gentleman on frequency made mention of the braid and the coax, I've checked all of that. It's not an issue at all. Everything's intact. It's pristine in every respect. I swapped elements. I even took another meter from upstairs, brought it down to the basement, put this one aside, put this in its place, keyed it, and it worked beautiful. This little sweetheart over here just decided to retire on me. And I just got to cast it aside and not do anything with it because it's probably... In fact, I called the bird company, and he went overall with shipping and so forth over $200 to fix it. So, it's not feasible.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Yeah, I can see why you don't want to go through the repair procedure. And that meter movement itself, from my point of view, is very rugged. Those meters are known to be thrown into people's, an equipment sack, a case, there's another name for it that people use, where things get bounced around, and those meters are very rugged. This question, Vito, when you're using the so-called defective meter and you're getting a low reading, do you get any funny readings on the transmitter? In other words, if the input RF connector to the bird or the output RF connector for some reason develop a poor grounding or a poor center conductor contact, that would give a very high standing wave ratio to the transmitter, and the transmitter would behave differently. So when you're getting only a 20-watt indication, does that particular transmitter behave and do all its needles move the exact same way they normally do, indicating that it is seeing a 50-ohm load and getting good RF contact through the bird? Back to you on that one, Vito. W2PJF, K2RIW, the TechNet.
I timed out for a second. Did you get the whole thing what I was saying, that you missed something firstly?
We only missed 1 second, and I heard you on the input, so not to worry. Go ahead, Vito.
In answer to your question, everything is normal. In fact, there's even an antenna tuner in line, which I adjusted that to see what's happening. So everything is normal. It's just the meter itself is reading the same. In fact, I have several, 6 or 7, maybe more, field strength meters. And one I have down here in particular is reading normal output all the way through the scenario. So I'm getting out, there's no deviation in the RF output. It's just the meter is not reading correctly. So, as I had said, in order to have this fixed professionally, it's not feasible at all. And it's a pity, because all my meters are in pristine, I mean factory condition. And I'm just going to put it aside. It gives me some type of indication, so it's not accurate, but if I need some type of indication of whatever, see if I'm getting out any kind of power, it's fine. But it's not going to tell me the true power anymore. I think it passed on, Dick. Go ahead.
Quick comment, Dick.
Yeah, there's nothing to that machine except the slug, which is not really part of the meter itself, and you know you've got good slugs. And other than that, it's a housing with a feed through RF connector and a simple meter movement and a switch that allows you to read forward power or no, it's not even a switch. The slug is the switch. Don't give up on that thing. Put it aside temporarily, but you're eventually going to find out what it is, and you don't have to pay the hundreds of dollars to go through the repair procedure. Let's see what John's got to say. KC2WGB. Wonder if you've ever seen anything like this, John. K2RIW in the Texan.
KC2WGB. Oh, yes, I have, Dick. I have also like 9 of those meters. I'm sure Vito cleaned the contacts where the slug goes in, but there's one other thing that Eric brought to mind that I didn't think to mention. I've had it happen where transport of that instrument made a little bit of vibration, and I wonder, did Vito check the nuts on the back of the meter to crack them loose and then tighten them again just to make sure they're making that connection? I've had that happen also. That's about all I can think of other than the meter movement failure. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, that's a good one, John. So in other words, the two nuts for the two connectors, the plus current input and the minus current input, those nuts need to be cracked because you can suddenly develop an oxide there. And I presume also, Vito, that you tried tilting the meter left, right, top down, and so on, and it, no matter which position you put it in, it still reads as low number. And so the more I think about it, the whisker of short circuit, very unlikely, but a high contact resistance, the spade lug that's under the nut right at the meter itself, that's a strong possibility. A little bit of extra resistance there would certainly give these readings. W2PJF, K2RIW, go ahead, Vito.
Okay, very quickly, no, I did not do either or. I didn't tilt it any other way. I just kept it vertically, so I can do that next. And okay, John, I did not loosen the nuts. I will loosen them. I even will take it apart and take some memory cost if I have to and put it all back together again and give that a try. So, no, those two things I have not done, I've even thought of that. So, okay, with all of that said, there's other people with more important issues in mind. I want to thank you so much for this information. At least I have a direction now to pursue. Very quickly, should it come to pass, Dick, are you in a position to take a look at this meter physically down the road if that should come to pass? Back to you, Dick.
Absolutely, Vito. And I was about to make that volunteer. I was about to volunteer that. That's such a simple movement, so to speak. And so I'd like to see that with my own eyes. Also, try something else. The meter is very rugged. I know that you treat all of your equipment with tender loving care, but that meter is known to be knocked around. It's used in the field where they get treated roughly. People put it into their gang box, as they call it, where they put all their equipment. Just throw it in there with a whole bunch of other things. So the next time you're making a reading with that meter, lift it up off the table an inch and let it drop back down. Bounce it a little bit. Hit it with your fist on your side, or use your radio mount. Hit it with your fist, bounce it a little bit, and see if anything happens. But right now, I put a lot of faith in what John said by loosening those nuts that produce the plus and minus contact on the meter itself, an extra high resistance in the system. And again, with your ohm meter, in the size, the times 30 scale, the times 1,000 scale, and you compare the ohm meter reading, you unplug the slug, and you put your ohm meter between the two contacts, ground and the contact, I think it is, of the meter, and you measure the resistance with your ohm meter on a good meter versus a bad meter, and you look at the amount of deflection of the meter itself while you're making that measurement. That's going to give you another clue. So as you do those measurements, come back and let us know what you find out. And if all that doesn't work, I'd like to see it myself, because I'm having trouble believing that very rugged Dawson-Dow movement itself failed. I think it's a very unlikely thing, because that meter, that the whole machine is made to be very rugged. Let me drop it.
And then pick up K2UPS with a comment.
Okay, we're going to pick up K2UPS right now. And I think he's in West Virginia, getting very close to Pennsylvania. K2 Uncle Papa Sierra, mobile.
Repeater, timeout.
Let's see if we've got 9375. Yes, we do. K2 Uncle Papa Sierra, mobile. Tell us where you are and your comment, Rich. K2RIW. You got it, Rich.
Okay, good evening, Dick. Now, I'm in Pennsylvania now, about 20 miles in on I-70, heading towards New Stanton. My comment with the meter is I don't know if he, on his transmitter, if he has the capability of dialing the power out all the way to zero and then slowly bringing it up and seeing if the meter gives him accurate readings until it hits 20 watts, or if he can switch it down to 5 watts or 10 watts. Because my point is, let's say the meter is, instead of getting stuck at 20, is only showing 20% of the true power output. So when he puts 100 watts in, it's showing 20. So if he put 10 watts in, does it show 10 or does it show 2? That's what I'd be interested in.
Yeah, if anyone has ever taken one of those meters apart, or if it wasn't super, what's the word I'm looking for, surgically clean conditions when the meter was assembled, the tiniest piece of a whisker of steel wool, the tiniest little whisker inside of the meter movement itself will make the meter stick in funny ways. So, again, while power is going through the meter and you're knocking on it with your fist, that condition will almost always change, a sticking meter movement. Unlikely, but possible. So you got a whole bunch of homework there to try all these experiments, Vito. And worst comes to worst, you're going to be handing it off to me, and I'll be making a pronouncement.
The comment, Dick?
Go ahead, John.
I just want Vito to pay attention to the scale he puts the ohmmeter on when he checks it, as you said, high range. You don't want to be in the R1 or the R10. You'll burn that meter out. Just a reminder.
Yeah, very good point. It turns out your ohmmeter is a source of a low amount of current, and the amount of current your ohmmeter puts out is strongly related to what meter reading you set, what full scale setting you put it on. If you put it on the 1 megohm full scale times 1 million, it puts out very little current. You put it on the times 10,000, you get a little more. Times 1,000, you get a lot more, and so on. As you go down to times 10 and times 1, it's going to put the full 1.5 volts, so to speak. And that could peg the needle so fast that it might damage it. So make sure you use the ohmmeter in the high ohm scales. And when you do get the meter movement to move, and you notice what the ohmmeter is reading, it's going to read a relatively low number, I think. But you're going to be comparing a known good bird 43 versus the suspicious one. So we've given you a lot of homework there, Vito. And come back whenever you want to tell us what you find out. Next person on the list was Joe, W-H-2-R-Y-Y. And how are those electrons in your neighborhood treating you tonight, Joe? Over to you, Joe, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Good evening, Dick. How you doing? Here's another simple question for you. Many radios, especially commercial ones, use a diode right next to the power cord. That's normally non-conducting if your power polarity is correct. But as soon as you put the power cord reversed, it causes that diode to conduct and hence the short, trying to protect the rest of the radio by blowing the fuse. So I have two questions. I'm not sure how they actually developed the coming up with the right kind of diode to be able to do that. But here's the first question. Since the fuse itself takes maybe milliseconds to actually burn open, how fast does that diode, by conducting the voltage or current in reverse mode, take to actually short? Because normally you had current limited to the diode, it would give you 7/10 of a volt in the case of a silicon diode. But when these things short, that goes to some sort of extremely low ohmic value, trying to protect the rest of the radio by causing the fuse to blow. Back to you, Dick.
I've got a Kenwood radio that takes 12 volt input, 13.8, and it's got one of those healthy diodes in there. The diode, as I remember, was something like a 5 ampere rating, silicon diode. And the whole reason for that is that the plus 13 volts into the radio of the right polarity, everything's hunky-dory. If you were able to get 13 volts into the radio of the wrong polarity, you could do a lot of damage to the regulator transistors, maybe the integrated circuit. You could do an awful lot of damage. So by putting that diode in there, making sure that the diode becomes a nearly short circuit, the diode is not going to allow, no matter how fast you put the voltage there, the diode's not going to allow any more than 7/10, 8/10, 9/10 of a volt of the wrong polarity. And of the wrong polarity, that level of voltage cannot do damage. So don't worry about the speed of that diode. If your on-off circuit applying the 12 volts, then your power supply can't come up that fast, if you know what I mean. If your power supply was already running full blast, and you connected and disconnected the connector on the back of the rig, yes, in that case, you could make a rise time. Let me drop it. You could make a rise time of a nanosecond. But under those conditions, the reverse voltage that's going to appear on the radio, it may go to, let me pick a number, 2 volts, but only for a nanosecond. And so in that brief amount of time, that low amount of voltage, it's very unlikely to do damage. So don't worry about the speed of the diode. If your diode needs replacement, has the right ampere rating. And if you want to be double-dot sure, you use the manual and you find out the exact part that you put in. But the speed of the diode, I don't think it's a factor, Joe, but it's a good thing to worry about. In my particular case, I had a pretty healthy power supply. I hooked it up backwards, and I managed to cause a failure of that diode. In other words, by putting a lot of current to it, the diode permanently became a zero-ohm short circuit. Thank goodness it didn't blow open. Otherwise, it would have really heavily damaged that radio. W2RYY, K2RYW in the TechNet.
Oh, I understand what you're saying, Dick, but my question was more specifically, how fast does it take that diode to actually go from, say, like you said, you have, you know, 2 volts across it, but typically it's at least 0.7 as it starts to conduct. But as its current increases beyond this point of what it can take internally, at some point it just goes bam, and it goes to zero, well, maybe not quite zero, but something extremely low. How fast is that transition time typically?
Okay, the way you asked the question, Joe, there's two or three different questions you could be asking. Are you asking that when you put forward current into the diode, which is the reverse polarity for the radio, and you put in enough current to make that diode fail, are you asking the rate at which it goes from, let's assume it's got 1.5 volts forward current at 5 amperes flowing through it, and because you're overheating that diode, it's got watts of dissipation and a tiny little junction melts down, and hopefully it becomes a dead short circuit. Are you concerned with how fast the short circuit in the diode occurs? How fast is the fall time? Is that your question? It sounded like that's what you're asking. W2RYY, K2RYW in the TechNet.
That is correct. It was sort of just a curiosity question, because I do understand the mechanics of why they put it in a lot of equipment. Just in case you make an error, you're trying to save the rest of the radio by blowing the fuse and hopefully not, you know, frying the circuit board where the diode's connected to.
Okay, now as that diode goes into the thermal runaway meltdown condition, and it's going from, let me pick a number, 1.5 volts across it in the forward conducting mode, you're melting the junction, and the junction is no longer a diode, it gets too hot, the type N and type P section starts melting together, and it becomes a solid glob of conducting metal, and therefore it's going to move toward 0 ohms. It's going to get to a very low number as the diode goes into the short circuit mode. I'm wondering why you're concerned with how fast the voltage drop across the diode goes from 1.5 volts down toward nearly zero. What are you concerned with that one, Joe? Over to you, K2RIW.
I wasn't concerned with anything. It was just a question I brought up on the tech net. If it's the wrong type of question, excuse me.
Dick, as long as it's fused properly, there should be absolutely no problem.
Yeah, I'm not sure we really know the answer to your question, Joe. You've asked a good economic, technical question. Stop worrying. I'm not telling you it's the wrong question. I'm just letting you know that it's unusual, and I'm not sure that many of us really know. We haven't, not many people I know of, have put a fast recording oscilloscope across the diode. As you forward bias the diode and start putting so much current into it, that it goes into the failure mode, hopefully the short circuit failure mode. And hopefully the manufacturer of the radio has chosen a diode that is known to have a history of failing in the short circuit mode. If that diode should ever fail in the open circuit mode, which is another possibility, then the radio could suffer some very serious damage. It's a good academic question, Joe. I didn't say it's a bad question. Just that you can tell by the way we're all jumping around in this one. We don't have an exact answer, and I've never read an article where somebody has done that experiment. But we'd like to believe that it's a continuous voltage decrease from 1.5 down toward near zero as the diode goes into the meltdown mode. And with a reasonable speed of fuse, it's going to give you the protection you're looking for. And in my case, it did protect my Kenwood radio. Thank goodness, because I did something dumb one day. Okay. Anything further you would like to discuss on this one, Joe? W2LYY for a final. K2IW in the TechNet.
No, that's it for this week on this particular question. I thought maybe you might have come up with an answer of, like, you know, 10, 20 microseconds worth of time, but it would take the diet to typically do that. I don't know. Maybe I could, you know, maybe this type of answer is, you know, findable out on Google someplace.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Typically, how fast does a fuse actually take to blow? Like, say, in a tour radio, for example, like what I'm using now, it has typically a call for like a 15 amp to 20 amp fuse on the radio. 10 milliseconds to actually open up and, you know, cease letting current through it.
I have a little bit of information.
Okay, very good, Andy. One of the things I've got to bring to your attention, Joe, three times in a row, each time you transmitted, you didn't wait for the beeps. And on two of those times, you did time out the machine. Okay, Andy, W2CDL, K2IW, go ahead, Andy. Wait for the beeps.
Okay, I'm not going to stay on long because I'm in the middle of cooking. But I did hear and read, and I don't remember where I read this, that the diode that is used as a polarity protection diode, I think that's what Joe's talking about, is not an ordinary silicon diode, but a Schottky diode. And it was actually, you could Google that, and I believe I read this on the internet somewhere, because of its response time in relation to the fuse that they use in this particular radio, they recommend a Schottky barrier diode as opposed to an ordinary silicon diode, like a 1N4000 series. So I just wanted to add that in. Dick, back to you.
That's good to know, Andy. So not only is the Schottky diode faster, giving probably more complete protection even from transients, but I'd like to believe that the Schottky diode has a known failure mode where it fails in the short circuit mode versus the open circuit mode. I wonder if the article you read, Andy, said anything along those lines. W2CDL, K2IW.
It went into the reasons of why that type of diode would be advantageous as opposed to a silicon. So, Joe, if you do a Google search on that Schottky barrier as opposed to silicon in reverse polarity protection mode, I think you'll get some information on that. Just some information. I got to go back to what I was doing, but Dick, I just thought I'd mention that. W8CD, okay, ahead, Dick.
Okay, thank you, Andy. And Joe, that's a good question. We're slowly getting smarter in a lot of areas that there's a lot more to our radios than first meets the eye. Bernie, W02H, how are those electrons in Mastic treating you tonight? You've got a Bernie, K2RIW in the tech net. Wait for the beeps.
It's 2 November, W02 November. Pretty good, Dick. Good evening, and good evening to the net. I have an interesting question on solar panels. They're attempting to build behind me. There's about 100 acres there that they're going to put up a 19-megawatt solar farm. And my question was, I downloaded their environmental impact study, and it's quite intensive. It could be 4 inches thick. But I didn't see any mention in there about an RF engineering report. And my concern was with these panels that are going to be about 17 feet high in the air. They may raise them, put them on a platform or whatever, but they could be as high as 17 feet. That originally they were supposed to allow a buffer about 200 feet. Now they're talking, trying to change the zoning on it to bring it as close to me as about 50 feet away. So my question was, with a 19-megawatt, the solar panels, the RF energy, or am I going to be in some kind of electromagnetic field? Is there any concern about that? And then getting outside in my backyard with a radio or television, with antennas, we're going to be getting noise? I don't know. I didn't see anything on that. I was going to raise the question at the town board. And then the inverter, which is going to be, well, the inverter is going to be about a mile up. Solar farm is about a mile long, about 100 acres in linear. But the inverter is going to be all the way up in the corner away from me, the northeast corner, close to the sidewalk. So if you're walking down the sidewalk, or are you going to create, would they be creating, like, the inverters are notoriously noisy. And the RF fields from that and all, I just didn't see anything on that. And the handling of the panels, if they crack, what's inside the panels? You know, is there any mercury? I don't know what's in there. They crack them, are they, stuff's going to go, the handling of them, is it going to go into the soil? It's going to be, because this panel borders on the river, Forge River here, which is already polluted. So anyway, back to you, Dick. W02N.
Yeah, I don't think you've got something to worry about here, Bernie. Those solar panels, sunlight shines on them, and they produce a rather pure DC voltage. There's no RF there at all. It's a DC voltage only, created by the solar panels. And they're usually hooked together in some kind of a parallel series-like combination. And one possible design is they make each solar panel have enough series elements such that it produces a fairly high voltage, maybe hundreds of volts of DC, and therefore they don't need very heavy wiring to go back to the inverter. The DC voltage coming out of the panels goes to the inverter, and the inverter is then going to convert that into a 60-cycle sine wave. And without a doubt, poorly designed inverters, as we have in some of our solid-state power supplies, our switching mode power supplies, some of them can be RF-wise very noisy. Let me drop. But that's only true of a poorly designed, inexpensively designed inverter. A properly designed inverter can be extremely quiet. Manfred Mornhinweg, a man in Chile, who had an article in the December issue and the January issue, a two-section article, QST Magazine. I'm trying to remember what year that was. I did know at one time, and I knew his call letters. But knowing his name, we'll eventually find him. He produced a 40-watt 12-volt power supply, 13.8-volt power supply, which takes 110 volts input and gives you 40 volts of output in the switching mode. And so whenever you look at the schematic diagram of Manfred's switching mode power supply, the first thing you start asking is, how come it's got all those extra components? It's got extra inductors and extra capacitors and extra diodes in 20 places. In raw parts, it's going to cost you $5 or $10 more to make this power supply. However, the switch mode power supply runs at something like 90 or 95% efficiency. You can take the 12-volt output, couple it with a coupling capacitor directly into the input connector of your HF receiver, and tune across all of the handband. I mean, we're not talking about radiated signal. We're talking about pure conducted signal while the power supply is under load and you can't find any extraneous signals. And this thing is running at 100 kc. It's switching at 100 kc. You would expect to see a whole comb lines of on the spectrum analyzer, lines across the RF spectrum every 100 kc, and you do not. Let me drop. So the point is, with good design, switching mode inverters and power supplies can be extremely quiet if they're done correctly, if somebody is worried about all the fine details. So the solar panels themselves, they're not going to give you any grief. And the inverter, if it's a reasonably good design, and considering the fact that we're talking about 19 megawatts, when you're up to that power level, that's not some quick back-of-the-envelope-like design. Hopefully that's a design that's been used in many places around the world, around the United States, and it's got a lot of track record and a lot of history. So the chances of you getting electromagnetic interference from this, I think, is very low. That's my opinion. I'm going to pass it back to you, Bernie. Drag your feet in case there's somebody else that might have some other opinions on this one. WO2 November, K2IW in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick. Well, that's quite reassuring. I thank you. The DC voltage, I didn't even realize about that. And I'm glad that, I won't be hearing anything out here and in my rigs, and won't cause any interference, and I won't be in that magnetic field that I was more or less worried about, to be in that thing 12 hours, 50 feet away from it, all day long. But that's good to know, as long as it's not going to really interfere with me physically. It might be better than a factory. K2RIW, WO2N, and the TechNet. Good job. Thank you.
Yeah, as that installation is established, Bernie, come back periodically and let us know what you see, but I don't think you're going to see anything. The current it puts out is not that high. It's not going to make a strong magnetic field. The magnetic field it makes is DC, not AC. You'll be amazed at the strength of the magnetic field your body is exposed to when you get into an NMR machine, MRI machine. You're into a very strong magnetic field, a DC magnetic field. So a steady-state magnetic field, the body can tolerate a lot of that. An AC magnetic field, that's something else, but the solar panels don't put out AC. So I think you got very little to worry about. Okay, the next question on the list was Dennis, KD2, I can't read my own writing yet. Kilo Delta 2, Lima Yankee Whiskey, I think it is. You got it, Dennis. K2RIW in the TechNet. Wait for the beeps.
Oh, thank you. Good evening, Dick. Good evening, Ned. Just a very fast question. It goes back to the meter. I purchased a SWR meter by MFJ, the 873, and just trying to do some research. I couldn't find anything on the internet. I'm using this, obviously, to measure my wattage and my SWR. My question is it okay to leave this thing hooked up all the time, or is it just for a test purpose where you get disconnected every time you're done testing your SWR? Besides losing the dB gain, will do any damage to the meter? Over to you, Dick.
Lots of people will leave a SWR / power meter in the line 24/7. Lots of people have done that. A well-designed meter, no problem. Insertion loss of the meter, movement, the whole circuit has got to be low if you think about it, because if it dissipated 2 watts, and you're running the 100-watt level. Percentage-wise, that's very little. You know, 0.01 dB of loss. And 2 watts of loss in the meter would be creating quite a bit of heat. You'd know right away by putting your hand on the case. So the fact that it's going to have insertion loss is not a problem. The meter itself, whether you make a measurement of 2 seconds, two minutes, or 2 hours, shouldn't make any difference if it's well designed. And to be able to continuously monitor your forward power and reverse power, particularly on a rainy day, to see if something funny is happening in the antenna, that's a fun thing to look at. I've personally done that. I've had a meter that can read power forward and reverse, and it didn't read standing wave ratio directly. It had to take the forward and reverse power readings and either go to an equation or go to a graph to figure out what was the standing wave ratio. But you sort of know. When you've got 100 watts going forward, and if you've got 2 watts coming back from the antenna, you know you're in good shape. If you've got 20 watts coming back from the antenna, you know your standing wave ratio is starting to get kind of high. So I wouldn't worry about that. And I'll bet you'll find, if you do a little bit of survey of other guys who have got a meter like that, I'll bet you'll find a certain percentage of those guys leave it in the line all the time. KD2, LYW, K2LYW, you got it, Dennis.
Yeah, for a comment, if I may.
Okay, wait for the beeps, and you got it, Vito.
I'm backwards correct.
Vito, give us a whole paragraph. Whatever you said was so brief, I didn't understand it. So, you did some experiments, and have you gotten improvement of your bird 43? The B2QJF, K2RIW, you got it, Vito. Give us a whole paragraph. Wait for the beep.
Well, it works perfect. John Beck was correct. I loosened the nuts, I wiggled the contacts, put it back together again, and it came to life. Back to you, Dick.
Okay. I've got the great big list in front of me, right alongside of John's name. I'm going to put a great big star. He earned his keep today. Well done. Okay. Yeah, my guess is the nuts are made out of brass. Maybe the great big washer that the spade lug was also made out of brass. It's a guess on my part. And they can easily build up copper oxide. And the way that meter movement works, it's running on an extremely low voltage coming out of that slug. And so it doesn't take very much contact resistance for the meter to not read anywhere near as well as it should. Well done. Okay, let's turn it over to John. Hey, John, you hit the nail on the head tonight. Good thing you got so many of those Bird 43s and you've had a couple of failures. KC2WGB, take a bow. K2RIW, go ahead, John.
KC2WGB,
and
the wheel of the common. Also, there's another thing I forgot to mention, Dick. That I did that on 1 meter where I said, like Vito, I fixed the problem. And then a couple of weeks later, I was having the problem again. I knew it couldn't be those because I cleaned them thoroughly. Took the meter apart. Although the meter lugs looked like the wires soldered to them on the inside were perfect, they weren't. I had to re-solder those two connections. Which one it was, I don't know, but I re-soldered those and then the problem disappeared. But basically, it's the same thing, a bad connection. So, glad we could help. KC2WGB, back to you, Dick.
Yeah, maybe there was a cold solder joint where the wire went into the lug, and the lug itself was probably a copper-like material, brass, bronze, going into these nuts out of the meter, which are also, I think, brass or bronze. So, sounds like Rich has also run into Bird 43, funny things. N2EO, go right ahead with your comment, Rich. K2RW in the deck net.
Okay, no one wanted to address the comment to the fellow who said about keeping a watt meter in line all the time. I've been doing that for years. The meter I like in particular is Diva, D-I-A-W-A. The driver meters and they can for different frequency ranges. They're not bird meters, but if you don't have a bird, I think they're next to the best thing. But I always leave one in line all the time, so if I have problems with an antenna or a radio, I know before there's even more damage. I think it's a wonderful idea. Bad kinetic.
Okay, thank you, Rich. Yeah, I kind of thought so. If you study what's inside of a standing wave ratio meter, power meter, that's capable of running at the 100-watt level or above, it's by definition got to have very low insertion loss, otherwise it would be generating a whole lot of heat. So it's a low-loss circuit, and if it's of a reasonable design, the fact that it's there all the time shouldn't create any problems. Let's see if Dennis has any further questions or comments on this particular subject. KD2, LYW, KTRIW. You got it, Dennis. Okay, maybe Dennis is satisfied. Maybe he got called away. Is that you, Dennis?
Affirmative, KD2LYW, this is Dennis. No further questions at this time. You gentlemen answered my questions. Thank you very much. Back to you, Dick.
And as you're using that meter continuously and looking at it while you're talking over your ham radio, I'm going to make a real corny joke here, Dennis. More power to you. Okay. And your ability to monitor it. I think I've gone down the list of everybody who signed it. I hope I didn't forget anybody. I'll give a quick standby to make sure K2RIW is listening.
Comments on a previous question. It's just some measurements if you want to know if you're curious.
Yeah, I think I heard Hal, but I can't be sure because he was dropping out 5 times in a row. 80% of the time it was dropout. But he said quickie answers. Go right ahead, Joe. W2RYY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
I'll make sure I let the beep go by because they don't scold me. I have a 260, like probably a lot of other hams do in their shack, and I also have a Fluke 77 multimeter. I put the multimeter in amperage, which on the lower amp scale will measure DC up to 300 mils. I took the Simpson, put on the RX 10,000 scale, and I get a reading of the on the Fluke of 0.07 milliamps, which I guess is 70 microamps. So just, if you have the guy do that to check the meter, that's like almost 3 times the current movement of the meter. It may cause the thing to go right off the other scale. It may cause, you know, some damage to the end of the movement. Just think about that. I went to RX 100, and it was like 1.2 milliamps. R1 was like 38 milliamps. So I'm not sure what kind of equipment you would suggest to generate current, but it might be more than the meter actually really can actually stand full scale.
Who are the comments? Joe, when you went to the higher ohm meter settings, I presume the current went down to a much lower number. Is that true, Joe? Go ahead.
Yes, well, the Simpson 260, which the timer was 3 minutes instead of 90 seconds, on R1, I got a current output out of the leads of about 38 milliamps. On R100, the current went down about 1.25 milliamps. On R10,000, it went to 0.07 milliamps, which is 70 microamps. That's the statement I was making. That's like almost 3 times the meter movement of the meter movement of the bird. I think the 30 microamp full scale.
Yeah, that's a new one on me, Joe. Do you think the full scale meter on a bird 43 is 30 microamps? I am guessing it's 50 microamps. I think there are very few meters beyond sensitivity of 50 microamps. You would start be using wiring in there that's so fine that it wouldn't be as rugged as you'd like it to be. That bird 43 is going to be bounced all over the place. So I'm guessing that that meter movement is 50 microamps. I wonder if you happen to know that one, John. KC2WGB, K2RIW, the tech man.
DPZ with a comment.
Yes, Dick, it's 30, not 70, not 50. Definitely, I purchased enough of them. And I don't know, they, like you, I think that's a specially wound meter because that is awful low. But it is 30 for sure.
DPZ with a comment.
Go ahead, Hal. And you got to speak low, otherwise you keep jumping out of the machine. That happens many times during many days. You've got it, Hal.
Thank you, Dick. It's a 30 microamp full scale, the yaw of all movements. And many times when you have a bird watt meter, when you transport it, you take the element and put it halfway around. That shorts out the meter, dampens the meter, so you will not damage the meter in transit. And basically, if any meter you want to check, let's say a SAMFAST or something like that, take and put something across the two terminals in the back, wiggle the meter back and forth, and if the meter dampens when you take the shorting thing off, then you know the meter movement's okay.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion, Hal, which it might not be in the owner's manual. So if you take the slug and rotate it halfway between forward and reverse, it will create a short circuit on the voltage going from the slug to the meter. Therefore, the meter has got a short circuit across it. Therefore, it's dampened. And as you're bouncing the meter around in your gang box, if you're one of these guys doing a union work, then the meter is much more protected when it's dampened. It can't swing rapidly and ram against the pegs. So it looks like we did confirm it's a 30 microampere movement. Joe, when you go to a high enough time scale, like the 1 million scale, I'd like to believe the current coming out of your ohm meter was a lot lower. Is that true, Joe? Is there a scale that you could find that was below? Well, by the way, you put 50 microamps into a 30 microamp meter. It's going to slam over to the right-hand side. But that's not such an overload that it's going to create damage, in my opinion. I might be wrong on that. But is there a, when you go to the higher ohm meter scales, did the current go down? W2RYY, K2RYW in the tech net.
I'll say it again, all right? On the R1 scale, this is with looking at the leads from the meter connected to a Fluke 77 set to read DC current with full scale 300 mils. It made the digital meter go up to 38 milliamps. On the R100 position, the meter, digital meter, read 1.25 milliamps. On the R10,000 scale, it read 0.07 milliamps, which is 70 microamps. That's why I made the comment. The meter does not have a Simpson 260 does not have a 1 meg scale on it. As far as the R range, is only three ranges: R1, R100, and R10,000. Those are the scales that you have selectable. And I just thought I'd measure the current to bring it back up here, just to let you know, because it's probably is almost three times the current that the meter wants to see. So you may want to, the guy may want to try that, but maybe put some other resistance in the circuit to limit the current a little more to be on the safe side.
Comment.
Go ahead, John.
Well, as anybody knows who's worked with meters, when you're doing that test with your 260, you put it on the highest range you have, and you flash the terminals. You don't make a solid contact until you get an idea of what that travel looks like, and it's a good gauge. But you're right. 30 microamperes with 50 microamperes, you can let it pin, and if you don't leave it there, you're not going to damage it.
Yeah, I've used Simpsons and triplets, and I didn't have a good enough memory that the highest scale is times 10,000. Some of my other meters go much higher than that. I think the 1 megohm, some of my digital voltmeters go up to 1 megohm, 1 million times the reading. or maybe it's 1 megohm or 10 megohms full deflection. Here, I'm not sure. Okay, so we got to be careful. Particularly if you're testing, say, field effect transistors with an ohmmeter. There are certain digital voltmeters that, depending on what scale you're in, can put out some pretty high voltages and or high currents, which in the case of a very delicate microwave field effect transistor could create damage.